This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This month, the Library of Congress added the 1969 hippie biker film Easy Rider to the National Film Registry. Dennis Hopper starred in and made the film with Peter Fonda. I spoke with Dennis Hopper about Easy Rider in 1990.
I have to ask you about Easy Rider, the 1969 film that you co-wrote, directed, and starred in. You had done some work with Roger Corman. Peter Fonda had done some biker-type movies and acid trip movies with Corman. Did you see this as an exploitation film, or did you want it to be a movie in the spirit of the counterculture?
You're talking about the Easy Rider,
yeah.
I wasn't really thinking about either one of those things. I wanted to win the Cannes Film Festival. I wanted it to be an art film.
Right.
The counterculture was becoming the culture at that time. So I thought I was making a film for everyone. What I did was I showed people smoking marijuana without going out and killing a bunch of nurses for the first time. And I used the music of the day as a time capsule kind of thing rather than writing a score for a movie. It was the first time individual songs had been used for a film. The editing of the cemetery sequence was like a lot of experimental films that I'd seen of the day, Bruce Conner in particular. I'd used a lot of cutting that I'd seen on television for television commercials. We now look at MTV, but if you realize that those rides that I edited to the music, to Jimi Hendrix and to the Byrds and to Dylan and so on, those were the first MTV kind of things, music video kind of things that were ever done.
Were you already doing a lot of drugs when you made Easy Rider, and was that out of control at all?
There was a lot of smoking of grass on that picture. Grass made me paranoid, and I didn't do it. I would do it. I did it like for the scene where Peter and Jack and I are all smoking marijuana, and we see the space people, or Jack talks about space people and so on. But most of the time, I didn't smoke it, only because it made me paranoid. But I drank. I was a drinker. I was a classic drinker in the great tradition of John Huston, Howard Hawks, John Ford, and Dennis Hopper. Now, I was an alcoholic, and I was never a big pot smoker, even though I smoked pot a great deal in my life. I didn't do it while I worked.
What were your paranoid fantasies that it would bring out? Or what form of paranoia would it bring out in you?
Well, it would interfere with the work, and nothing that I did that interfered with the work. The work was the only thing that was important to me. People came to Paul Lewis and I a few years ago. Paul was also the production manager on Easy Rider, and all the films that I've made, he's been with me, the last movie and so on. And so people came and said, how could you have done the last movie doing all that cocaine and so on? We didn't have any cocaine on Easy Rider. We just made it popular. That was baking soda that I chose to use in Easy Rider. But anyway, I went to Peru and I made a movie called The Last Movie, which I won the Venice Film Festival with, which was never distributed. It's a long story. But we used a lot of cocaine on that movie. And people said, how could you make a movie and drink and use cocaine and smoke grass and so on? And Paul said, are you serious? We were making movies. You know, it wasn't anything. If somebody had said, you can't have any drugs you have to make the movie, we'd have made the movie. Nobody said you can't have any drugs. And we weren't doing anything that interfered with what we thought was our work. So, it was always the work. The work was the most important thing. And the drugs and the alcohol and all those things were secondary to it. And we never, and I always measured it out. If I was getting too drunk, I'd do a little more cocaine, keep the work going. So, anyway, that wasn't it.
So how did it get to the point where you did so much drugs that you ended up not working?
Well, there comes a point where, if you're not the most popular guy in the world and in demand, suddenly people start looking at your behavior and not wanting to work with you. There are certain people that we don't have to name, but there's some very, very big people that it never interfered with their popularity and it never interfered with their careers, and some of our biggest stars. So, you know, and I'm not advising people to use drugs or not to use drugs. Drugs destroyed my life, but I probably would never have found out about it and never gotten straight and never gotten into the trouble that I got into with drugs and alcohol if my career had maintained a level where I was productive.
I get the impression that you've been working really manically since you've been straight.
Mm-hmm. I would have worked manically all my life if I had been allowed to.
I mean, if you got offered enough?
Yeah, I was never offered anything. So at a certain point, my using and my drinking became who's coming out of the dressing room, what Jekyll or Hyde, you know, what emotional roller coaster is he going to take us on now? So, you know, that's what, unfortunately, drugs and alcohol did for me in my life, and my personal life was a shambles. It never seemed to hurt what went on the screen, but it was the process to getting it on the screen that that terrified people.
My guest is Dennis Hopper. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our 1990 interview with Dennis Hopper.
You grew up on a farm. Were you anxious to get away when you were growing up?
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to know where the trains were going. I had a wonderful childhood, though. My mother ran a swimming pool in Dodge City, Kansas, and I lived with my grandparents. My father was at war in the Second World War, and I lived with my grandparents on a small farm, and then my grandfather worked on a larger farm in Garden City, Kansas, and a wheat farm that I would go out and work on during the summer, and I had a wonderful childhood on that level.
Your mother was very religious. She was a fundamentalist?
I don't know where that sort of started. My mother is religious, yeah.
What was your attitude about God?
When I was younger, she wasn't as religious as she became later in my life. I wasn't raised under any great pressure as her being a fundamentalist when I was a young kid. So that's sort of gotten distorted.
So there wasn't... there weren't...
religious pressures?
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I could wear lipstick and I could dress as a girl anytime I wanted to. Is that what you mean? Things like that? Yeah, and I was allowed to dance on the table and so on. No, I...
Took the words out of my mouth.
Thanks, yeah. Wait till I put this lipstick on, will you? No.
Yeah.
No, I didn't have those kind of pressures. I went to Sunday school and things like that, but I didn't have a lot of pressures in those ways. When I first saw my first movies when I was a kid, they really affected me, and I wanted to know how they were made. And I'm not sure that that's uncommon for any kid who first sees his films or first sees television or whatever.
Your first movie role was in Rebel Without a Cause. You were, I think, 18 years old. Did the movie help give you a sense of teenagers being their own culture and their own misunderstood culture? Were you already feeling that way?
When I went on that picture, I saw James Dean for the first time act, and at that point, all I was concerned about was being an actor. I wasn't concerned about, like, you know, whether people were juvenile delinquents or not. I had sort of come out of that, out of San Diego and Tijuana and that kind of area, but I was interested in acting, and I saw James Dean act, and I basically, through Rebel Without a Cause, I was just trying to figure out what he was doing, because I thought I was the best young actor at that time in the world, and I suddenly ran into this guy who was some years older than me, but he was doing work that I was so far over my head, I actually grabbed him on the Chicky Run and threw him into a car and said, "What are you doing? You got to teach me what you're doing."
So what did he teach you?
He wanted to know what my motivation was for wanting to act. Yeah, you know? And he asked me if I'd had a problem with my parents, that if I had actually hated my parents, and that was part of the drive that I had to want to become an actor. And I said that actually I had felt that. And he said, well, that's what he felt also, and that his mother died when he was very young, and he used to go to her grave and cry on her grave and say, "Mother, why have you left me? Why have you left me?" And that turned into, I'm going to show you, I'm going to show you, I'm going to be someone. And that was the drive that he had brought into his acting, which I described the same sort of feelings that I was misunderstood by my parents, and that I had that feeling when they came to the theater that I was going to show them. And it was like, you know, I'm going to show you, I'm going to be something, I'm going to be an actor. So this drive, this confused kind of drive and wanting to put it into other people's other parts and other things, and these feelings, to use them in some sort of imaginary given circumstance, became the key for acting. But anyway, he said you must learn how to not worry about the emotions, but you must learn how to do things and not show them. You must learn how to smoke a cigarette and just not act smoking the cigarette. You must learn how to drink a drink, not act drinking the drink. And if somebody knocks on the door, you go and answer the door. Then you see they have a gun in their hand. Then you react to the gun and so on. So basically, it's like don't indicate, but like do something and don't show it. And moment-to-moment reality. Never anticipate what the next moment's going to hold. And so, like, you know, he said, then, you know, you're a very good technical actor, so get rid of all that technique, though. Stop the line readings. Don't worry about how it's going to come out. Just let it come out. Work on a moment-to-moment reality level.
Stop the line readings. What did you stop doing?
Well, I mean, like, you know, I was out of a classical theater background, so, I mean, there were ways of reading lines, you know. I mean, even hello, how are you became a way of reading a line. So there's a lot of ways to say hello, how are you, besides one fixed way that you decide in your room somewhere that that's the way you're going to say hello, how are you.
Was James Dean the first friend that you had who died? I mean, like someone of around your age.
Yeah, I mean, there had been, I would think,
Did it scare you a lot to have someone who
was close
to you?
Well, it was more, more than a friend. I think of him more as a teacher than as a friend. We did two films together, which took about a year of our lives. He only made three movies. We did Rebel Without a Cause and then Giant. And then he died 2 weeks before we finished shooting Giant. So I was like 19, he was 24. It was more, we dealt with acting. We talked about acting. It wasn't like we went out and drank beers together and got high or like race cars or anything. When he died, it just destroyed me because I totally had this belief in destiny and how people are destined, to be to fulfill their destiny, you know. And I just couldn't understand why James Dean had died so young. He wanted to direct movies. He had only been in three movies, and it just destroyed my whole concept of destiny, life, and that kind of thing for years. I mean, probably still till this day, it still bothers me. I miss him. I wish I'd have seen his work.
Dennis Hopper recorded in 1990.